This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're going to ask two longtime Middle East peace proponents, one an Israeli, the other a Palestinian, how the war in Lebanon and the war in Iraq have affected prospects for negotiating a Middle East peace. A little later, we'll hear from Sari Nusseibeh, the president of Al-Quds University, the Arab University in Jerusalem. He co-founded a peace initiative with a former Israeli security chief. Our first guest is Yossi Beilon, the chairman of the Meretz Yachad Party in the Israeli Knesset. Beilon was an architect of the peace plans, the Geneva Initiative, and the Oslo Accords, which was signed at a 1993 White House ceremony in which Yitzhak Rabin and Yasser Arafat shook hands. In 2000, Beilon participated in Middle East peace talks in Taba. He's also held several ministerial positions in the Israeli government. Yossi Beilon, welcome to Fresh Air. You serve in the Knesset, but did the war take you by surprise?
Yeah. I must admit that it was a surprise, and that 6 years since our withdrawal from Lebanon were very quiet years and flourishing ones. We said, my party said, and I personally said, that since we withdrew totally from Lebanon, there was no justification for any military act against Israel. And once Hezbollah provoked us the way they did by kidnapping two soldiers and killing eight others, there was a full justification for Israel to react militarily. Then the question, of course, was what kind of a reaction should we choose? And this is a different question.
So what is your opinion of how Israel conducted the war?
Since Syria was the force behind Hezbollah, and without Syria, Hezbollah could not have acted, that some military targets in Syria were much more justified than civilian targets in Lebanon. So my initial idea was that the target was not properly chosen. Then we thought that the ground operation were totally a mistake. I mean, that after a few days of air attacks, we should have ended this operation and tried to have the best UN resolution. Rather than that, we continued the war, and we decided to go for a ground operation, and then even to enlarge it until the Litani River, which was a very big mistake.
Was Israel waiting for the opportunity to try to destroy Hezbollah's arsenal?
I'm not so sure. I think that we were taken by surprise. We were not 100% prepared. And I'm not sure whether the government of Israel waited for such a moment. I mean, perhaps there were people who said, well, it is better to have such an operation, a surgical operation right now, and not to wait until they are much better equipped. But I don't think that this was a real preparedness on our side and that people waited for this moment.
What do you think the war has done to Israel's image and to the image of its army?
Regretfully, I cannot say that we won the war of images. And that despite some of the achievements, like the decrease of the power of Hezbollah and the decision of the Lebanese army to deploy itself in the south of Lebanon after more than 30 years of Israeli requests which were rejected, still the general feeling is that it was far from a victory. And this has some bad ramifications on some of our enemies who believe that Israel is not as powerful as they had thought.
So do you think that in some ways that means the war leaves Israel more vulnerable?
It's a little bit too early to judge, because one can also raise a counter-argument and to say that it was easier for Israel to have peace with our neighbors when their feeling was of a kind of asymmetry, rather than when they felt that we won and they were totally defeated. This is especially right about Egypt and us after the 73 war, in which they thought that there was a big achievement for them, rightly or wrongly. And here, what I'm trying to think is whether it would be possible, against the background of the results of this war, to say, okay, you feel that you succeeded, rightly or wrongly, let's negotiate now, and it will be easier for you to negotiate with us, and we might get an agreement right now rather than years ago because of the very, let's say, vague results of this war.
And negotiate with who? Are you talking about negotiating with Hezbollah, with Hamas?
First of all, I would negotiate with everybody who is ready to negotiate with me. Neither Hezbollah nor Hamas is ready to negotiate with Israel, which leaves us with the government of Lebanon, with Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, and the Palestinian Authority, and with the Syrian government. All of them are speaking about an agreement with Israel, which is a very, very unique situation and a very positive one. And I think that we have to seize this opportunity rather than to dismiss it and try perhaps to go for another international conference, kind of a Madrid 2. The first Madrid conference took place in 91. After 15 years, I think that it is about time to reconvene, to analyze the achievements, to refer to the things which have not taken place yet, and to see how can we have peace with Syria, with Lebanon, and with the Palestinians.
My impression is that right now the war has affected confidence in Israel about pursuing a negotiated peace, and that seeing what the Hezbollah militia is capable of and seeing, you know, Hamas kidnap an Israeli soldier after Israel had withdrawn from Gaza, that a lot of Israelis have lost confidence in the peace process, and that the war and the Hamas kidnapping has reinforced the idea that Israel should at least temporarily give up on the idea of a negotiated peace. Is that an accurate reading of Israeli public opinion?
I don't think so. No? I don't think so. I think that people lost their confidence in a unilateral arrangement because of Lebanon and Gaza, and they feel that Israel was the one which was ready to give up, and the other side did not appreciate it, and in a way breached the non-agreement. I don't think that the same refers to peace agreements, because, I mean, it is very obvious. We have a peace agreement with Egypt since 79. We have a peace agreement with Jordan since 94. And these are the big achievements of Israel. Neither interim agreements nor unilateral steps were as successful. So I believe that, although I did not see new polls, but I do believe that the situation is that people are very disenchanted by unilateralism after a period of a year or so, whereby they thought maybe this was a nice substitute for agreements. And they understand today that peace agreements do not have substitutes.
Now, you mentioned skepticism, growing skepticism about unilateral withdrawals. You were one of the advocates of unilateral withdrawal from Lebanon in 2000. Do you have any second thoughts on how that was conducted?
No, not at all. I think that it is very clear that somebody like me would always, also in the future, support unilateralism if the alternative is to remain in the occupied land. This went for Gaza, this went for Lebanon, and will go for the West Bank. But I will always try and convince the decision makers to have a peace agreement. And this happened years ago with Lebanon. I believe that we should have signed an agreement with Syria and paid the price of the Golan Heights in order to have this peace, knowing that it will have a huge impact on Lebanon, and that as a result of such an agreement, we will also withdraw from Lebanon. But the government of Israel, which was then the government of the Labour Party and on which I served, was not ready to pay the price of the 100% of the Golan Heights. Barak was then the prime minister. And after a very, very important summit in Shepherdstown in December 1999, January 2000, he decided not to sign an agreement with Syria. And then I supported unilateralism as a fallback. And I think that what we got out of it is a relative silence for 6 years and a northern part of Israel which was flourishing in all these years. I don't think that anybody would now like to remain in Lebanon. And the proof is that nobody is suggesting today, after this operation, once we reoccupied South Lebanon, to stay there.
What's left of the peace movement in Israel and what is its position now?
Well, the peace movement in many ways won its day. I mean, what you have today is a government which is not the government of the peace camp, which is ready to have a peace, a Palestinian state. A prime minister who said some weeks ago that he was ready to give up on 90% of the West Bank without any return on the Palestinian side. So that, I mean, our big campaign of peace between us and our neighbors about Palestinian state, about putting an end to occupation, all these things became kind of a common denominator among most of the Israeli political parties, which is our huge, huge achievement. And I believe that today, especially when people see that it is not only a matter of force with which you solve problems and that you have to be diplomatic and you have to negotiate, I think that today we have a very special role and we are calling for immediate negotiations with all our neighbors, namely Syria, Lebanon, and the Palestinians. And we suggest a Madrid 2 conference in order to launch this process. I can also tell you that according to the polls which have been published in the last days, we are not losing. We are gaining.
But when Hamas controls the majority of seats in the Palestinian legislature and Hamas doesn't recognize Israel or its right to exist, how can you have a negotiated peace if you can't negotiate with Hamas?
Well, here the procedure is quite clear. The Hamas is telling the world that it is ready that Mahmoud Abbas will negotiate with Israel. Once he ends his negotiations, he will not be in a situation to decide for himself, but he will have to bring it either to a referendum or to a meeting of the Palestinian National Council. If there is a majority for such an agreement, then it will become a reality. This is what Hamas is saying. Now, there is now an opportunity for Hamas and Fatah to form a unity government. And I think that this would be a way for Hamas to stick to its ideology, but to enable others to negotiate on their behalf so that they will not be the ones to shake our hands, but they will benefit from an agreement with Israel, which is a kind of a process which they are going through while they are moving from a terrorist group or an opposition group into a political party in power.
So to sum up, in a time of incredible pessimism in the Middle East, you still hold out some optimism that this difficult time could be used as an opportunity to negotiate some kind of peace plan.
You're right.
Okay. Now, but, you know, a lot of people in Israel, I think, right now have the opinion that Hamas and Hezbollah are committed to the destruction of Israel and that Hezbollah's ability to hold its own in the war has reinforced that commitment to the destruction of Israel. What's your reaction to that point of view?
Well, there is a big difference between the two groups. Hezbollah is not a partner. It's not a potential partner. It's, after all, a small group. And the success of Hezbollah to survive, of course, doesn't prove that Israel was not in a situation to put an end to this to its existence. Had Israel used all its power to do this with Hamas, Hamas is a party which won, regretfully, the hearts of the majority of the Palestinians. And Hamas is going through a change, undoubtedly. It is not enough yet, but it is important. And I think that there are also some nuances inside this this movement too. And this is why I believe that with Hamas, at the end of the day, if they change their mind, or even if they just give Mahmoud Abbas the mandate to negotiate, there is a possibility to get to an agreement, which is not the case with Hezbollah. And I think that people understand this, the difference.
Meanwhile, what's the political war within Israel right now? You know, for example, there was a letter signed by hundreds of military reservists in Israel saying that their training was inadequate, the mission was unclear, and the military supplies and equipment were inadequate. What's happening in the Knesset now?
Well, I think that the situation right now is conducive to an investigation committee. Many forces are asking for it. In a vote in the Knesset yesterday, we had 25 members of Knesset supporting this idea and only 27 against it. So it was not far from becoming the declaration of the Knesset to have such an investigation committee. I believe that it won't be possible for the government to drag it for a long while, and eventually they will have to take a decision to have this committee. And then, once this committee is established by the Supreme Court and a senior judge will lead it, then I believe that part or most of this public protest will fade, because the main issue is this committee. It is true that we are going through a difficult process, not only because of the war, but also because of the different allegations against the president, the prime minister, the minister of justice, and others. And it is both a difficult period, but on the other hand, I must admit, a very interesting one, with options which are open towards solutions, because especially people in politics under distress might think that a big policy towards peace or towards something else will divert the attention of the people from criticism against them to the issue itself, and they may be right.
You know, in talking about peace, this is a time when we're seeing the rise of Islamic extremism throughout much of the Islamic world. And this extremist movement is not only very militant, it's very anti-Semitic and anti-Israel. How do you think the rise of this pan-Arab extremist Islam movement is affecting Israel's security and its options for a negotiated peace?
Well, it does penetrate the, I would say, inner circle of the Middle East. And the Arab countries around us are not immune against these trends. Still, I would like to reject the idea that what we have is a war of civilizations or war of religions. I think that everywhere, and also in the Islamic world, you have extremists, you have moderate people, you have pragmatic people. The wisdom is to create always the coalition of sanity. Those people who are much more moderate, much more pragmatic on both sides, and would want to live, and they want their kids to live. These are the majorities, by the way, everywhere. So the coalition of sanity is something which is available. And I think that the role of the peace camp is to put an end to the war situation in the inner circle, so that the inner circle, meaning Israel, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Palestinians, will not create a pretext for those who want to fight forever that they are fighting for some kind of a just cause like the Palestinian state or something like this. The whole idea, and this was the idea of the late Yitzhak Rabin, he wanted very much to have peace in the inner circle before Iran is becoming a nuclear power, and before the hatred towards Israel is so big in the Arab world that anybody who will make peace with us will be seen as a traitor. And he was right, and it is still not too late.
I'm interested in hearing how you think the war in Iraq has affected prospects for peace in the Middle East. When the Bush administration made the decision to invade Iraq, one of the arguments was that if you overthrow Saddam Hussein and create a democracy in Iraq, democracy will spread through the Middle East and help Israel negotiate a peace. And what do you think is the reality of that?
There are several impacts on the Middle East peace process. One, the United States administration is overwhelmed by Iraq, by the war in Iraq and its ramifications. There is no other issue on its agenda, no real other issue. As a result of it, the United States lost its energy, readiness, time to deal with other Middle East problems. Another point is Syria. Because of the very negative attitude of the United States to Syria against the background of the behavior of Syria in Iraq, the United States is boycotting Syria and cannot be anymore a mediator between Syria and Israel, which had been the case in the past. I believe that the interests of the United States, now being here in the Middle East, vis-a-vis many Middle Eastern forces, including Hezbollah, Hamas, and others, is tying its hands in its freedom to negotiate and to shuttle between us and our neighbors. So I would say that from many, many aspects, the results of the war on Iraq made it more difficult for us to achieve peace than before.
And finally, I'd like to know, just, you know, you've given us a lot of arguments why you think a negotiated peace plan is still possible, why the war can actually have opened doors if people allow those doors to be opened. But if it just taken your pulse for a second, if you could just give us a reading of how optimistic or pessimistic you're feeling right now.
I believe that there is an opening which wasn't there before. The big question is, how big is this opening? Is it big enough in order to change the situation towards peace, or is it just another ray of hope which might disappear? And this is why it is more than a matter of optimism or pessimism. It is a matter of creativity. It is a matter of readiness to be proactive and to do something towards it. And this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to speak with whoever I can in the leadership of the world, those whom I believe are relevant for the Israeli, Palestinian, Israeli, Syrian tracks, who can have their own influence and impact in order to make it possible for the different parties to have contacts, to talk to each other, and to go for serious negotiations after all these years. At least we now know what is the price, what should be done in order to have peace. And this is, I believe, a very important component towards peace. So I would say that I'm far from being pessimistic, but in order to be, I mean, I'm not just an optimist to believe that the situation will be better tomorrow. I believe that it is my task to make it so.
Yossi Beilin, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Yossi Beilin is a member of the Israeli Knesset and chair of the Meretz Yachad Party.